One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, welcome along. It is the Red Men Originals podcast. Before we dive into the show, obviously we're going to be talking about Liverpool, Manchester City. We're going to be looking ahead to the midweek game against LASK. LASK, yes. But you might be wondering why, for those of you watching this on YouTube, why we're just looking at Mr. Pajak and Mr. Me. It's because we can finally announce that, yes, we've got two amazing live events coming up over, one in Belfast and one in Dublin. We've been teasing the fact that we've got an amazing musical artist. We can now finally reveal that it is... Gio! Hey! There we go! Nailed it. Hi, yep. Mate.
Are you?
You okay? Freshly agreed. Yeah.
New contract.
I haven't even done the lean yet.
No, but I'm made up. You've asked me. I know you have fantastic live shows, and I know you've got amazing subscribers. You get involved, and it's going to be a great night. I can't wait for it.
Two nights. Absolutely. Equally great, because it's Ireland. You have to be clear on this. It's going to be equally as great in Belfast as in Dublin. No one's going to miss out one way or the other. Tickets are available right now. If you go on ticketmaster.ie and just search Redmen TV, the tickets will come up. We'll put the link in the description underneath as well. So, yeah. The biggest part.
Well, the best thing about this for me is that they're on Ticketmaster. It's weird that, yes. You know, because normally we've like sold them from our site or something. There's a bit more legitimacy to being on somewhere like a Ticketmaster.
Like,
yeah, it feels proper, doesn't it? And the fact that it's .ie as well.
Yeah.
Just feels good.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm made up for it. Get involved with them. If you're looking for something to get yourself for Christmas, or go, I don't really know what to do. Yeah, go and get tickets to Redmen Live with Keo. It'll be a belter. Okay, so yeah, we're going to be doing those bits and pieces. One other piece of business before we crack on with the show. So we've been running a half price code over Black Friday. It's meant to end tonight at midnight, but obviously with the podcast being this, I know some people listen to this on Monday and then into Tuesday. So we've extended the code from Monday at midnight to Tuesday at midnight. So if you go over to redmenplus.com and use the code REDS on a captain yearly subscription, then it's going to give you half price off a year of Red Men Plus. Imagine how much silver we're going to win in that time. That's like a quadruple between now and the end of the season, obviously. And then you're going to be flying well into next year when we're heading towards being top of Christmas again. So yeah, make sure you
fill your European Super Cup. So potential five.
Charity Shield.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We could be both teams in the Charity Shield by that point. Get involved with that, as I say. We've extended that just for podcast listeners until Monday, Tuesday at midnight. So yeah, head to redmenplus.com. Use the code REDS and get a captain yearly subscription for half price. Right, okay, let's dive into it. Liverpool went to Man City, Chris, and drew 1-1. It was, without, you know, being too on the nose on it, it was just better than last year. And that's an important thing, a really important thing. We got absolutely battered last year. And this year, as much as I'm seeing a lot of, like, City were still the better team and blah, 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 and they had some chances, they fluffed them, all that kind of shit. We've come away with a point, we're feeling good for the point. And one of those reasons is because we were miles off it against them last season.
We were. Look, at the end of the day, for me, it's just that, like, this group of games up until Newcastle on New Year's Day, I have always thought was going to be what we learned about the team, or what we know about the team and what they can achieve this season. We're going to learn in these 11 games. It was never about what we do against City to find out whether we're going to be challenging, but it's a good barometer, a bit of a yardstick regardless. And the fact is that they couldn't put us away. It's not our fault they couldn't put us away when we didn't play at our absolute best. When they've won, what was it, 23 games on the bounce at home this season or something, or was it 22 heading into this game? you know, that's on them. Like, we played all right and we managed to get a result. If we'd have played better, I think we would have won the game. I think Guardiola knows that Liverpool are the serious title contenders with them this season. I think he's always known that when Liverpool get it right, it's always going to be Liverpool. And I think he's come out of the game. He won't have slept Saturday night, whereas Klopp will have slept like a baby Saturday night, knowing that he's got a point. And if you can get a point away at the Etihad, you always talk about it. How do you construct a title challenge? Well, those two games against Manchester City are massive. We've played them away from home. We've taken a point off them. Can we get more points out of the six that are available than Manchester City? It's a damn good start.
Yeah, absolutely. Keo, how are you feeling about it?
The years we lost the title by a point, did we lose both times at the Etihad? Yeah. In my opinion, to mount a decent title challenge, you'd want 4 points out of them two games. Yeah. I agree with Chris. I think Pep Guardiola is sleeping a little bit rougher than Jürgen on the back of it. And I don't think, when people saying, you know, we weren't at our best, I know we weren't. I don't think we were bad. I think we were actually quite good. And I think if City came to Anfield and done that, they'd be getting praised big time. Anfield's a tough place to go. Great side. Same as the Etihad, they're one of the best teams in the best team in world football. Mm-hmm. At their gaff, on a run, and they've got a goal up, and we've answered back. So it's sad.
Our record there is too awful for us to be disappointed at not winning, Chloe. That's kind of my feeling whenever we go the Etihad. It's amazing when we do it. I mean, Chris and I still dining out on when we beat them 4-1. You know, it was like the best ever feeling, you know, early days on
and
the year.
And yet that was 1 in 15 where we've won. Yeah. Yeah. In the league.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, this is one of those games where it's actually not the classic that maybe we were all hoping for. I'm glad we got the Trent Shush moment. We're going to talk about it more in part two. But it was, yeah, it's one of them that it'll be, the value of this will be seen in how Liverpool perform beyond this rather than the individual results itself.
Yeah, I was one of those who said, even before kickoff, I'd take a point. The entire week I sat there and said, just give me a point out of Manchester City and I'll be happy with that.
I think you said it literally within moments of the Brentford game. Yeah, like, you walked out, in fact, we were probably in the car park, like, and you're like, yeah, I'll have a point against City. I was like, okay.
Yeah, and it makes it, I came out that ground and it felt like a win because Liverpool had to score with 10 minutes to go, and yet we had 8 minutes extra time, so actually it was 18 minutes to go. But with 10 minutes to go, they had missed some big, big chances in that second half. Liverpool felt like, on the counter, especially Ryan Gravenberch, I thought he was great when he came on, but on the counter, we were getting in dangerous positions, but we always made the angle tight for ourselves when we were straight on goal. It was like, people were afraid to shoot. It was like, oh no, let's pass it to Salah, but Salah was, you know, never going to score from the angle where he was. And it felt like we just needed a moment of quality, and a Scouser stepped up and shushed the Etihad, which was already pretty much silent anyway, but it shushed the Etihad. And I came out thinking, I literally went, someone, boss win, and went, oh wait, no, boss draw, because you'd been down for that long and you just felt like City could get another goal. They'd had so many chances. And for the Reds to get that last goal to equalise it, you came out there thinking, get in.
I've seen some City fans or City accounts or whatever online trying to spin this as the way you always do when you're a bit young and stupid and bullish, of like, well, it shows how massive we are and it shows how crap Liverpool are that they're celebrating this point like a win. It's like, no one really celebrates. It feels more akin to a win because you scored the last goal and you've walked out feeling better about the game. But this is the point, Chris, what we were saying is like, there's no trophy for drawing with Manchester City.
For a start, the talking shit, we celebrated the goal.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we celebrated. At the end of the 90 minutes, there wasn't people high-fiving each other on the pitch because they got a point against Manchester City. Like, Arsenal probably did at the weekend when they get a late winner, which is absolutely fine. I've got
from Klopp.
We celebrated the goal, yeah, and we got a draw. Yeah. That's what we celebrated. So they're talking out of their arse, to be honest with you.
And walked away with Klopp going, actually, we didn't even play that good. You know, there was a lot of that thing was like, we could play better here.
But I think that's why we're all so happy with the point, is because Liverpool weren't great. There was moments in that game where, you know, Alisson Becker, I've never seen a performance from Alisson Becker like the one he had. And you know what made me feel even better about it was because that was their strongest 11 and they've got no worries really about their team. Yeah, John Stones could have came in, but he was on the bench. You know, they've got world-class players in every position and specialised players. I was so worried about McAllister and Costas going into this game, and I thought they were brilliant. And that's what I mean. We went there without a recognised DM and no Andy Robbo, who is a leader, is one of our leadership group and is a boss left back. And I've sat there and said, Costas, I'm a little bit worried for in this run of games. And they both proved me wrong, and we walked away from the Etihad with McAllister playing at DM, Costas playing at left back, and they both were two of the best players on the football pitch. So that you also have to take that into consideration, is the fact that our squad was still missing some key areas, where they have just got an unbelievable squad all over. So it just felt bigger. It felt like a big point, especially scoring the equaliser. If we would have scored first and they'd have equalised, it'd have been deflated. But to get the draw, it was boss.
I agree with Chloe's points there, but I think Liverpool got a better squad. I really do.
When you look at
the bench and stuff like that from City, well, it says a lot to me that Guardiola didn't make a change and Klopp was able to make changes and impact the game, actually. And I don't think those first two changes in the grand scheme of things really helped us, if I'm being honest. I thought they would. I thought they were the right changes, but I don't actually think they did help us. Gravenberch helped us massively, obviously. You know, see, I'd said before the game that I wanted to see out of Ryan Gravenberch, or what I thought could happen is him to be a little bit Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain 2017 against him.
And
pardon?
Carry the ball a bit.
Carry the ball. And he'd done it for the goal, didn't he?
It's Rodri Skins as well, by the way. We're talking about like starting 11s and number 6 is holding midfield. He's not having a natural one. But before that game, I'd probably say Rodri's one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
And he absolutely leaves him for dead.
It's hilarious. I've done the City squad thing. I think it's interesting. There's a comment here from Tempo here saying City do not have a deep squad. It's very thin, 14 to 15 players. And that's actually the point. Like, obviously, Grealish is out and De Bruyne are out there, the two, the big ones that they're missing for that one.
I'm not sure Grealish is in there starting 11.
Well, no, I don't think so either. But he's
obviously in the top 14.
They've got like, two goalies on the bench. And that's that always feels like a very pointed, we've got loads of injury problems that normally says when you're putting two goalies on the bench. More often than not, it's in Europe. You do that as well because you're taking them there. I think it's more accepted. But I just wonder what they're doing, what they're thinking is, what is their game plan? I mean, they'll probably just go and sneakily buy a couple of players in January or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we had a big chat on the final word, didn't we, Chris, about how it was, I'm not totally convinced City are this absolutely indestructible force anymore. Did they have Calvin Phillips on the bench? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
He came over and laughed with Trent and hugged Trent at the full-time whistle, where if that happened at Anfield and we'd just drew, I'd be absolutely furious. But Calvin Phillips was absolutely having a laugh.
Saying he'll see it in January, isn't he, Calvin?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's probably trying to get himself a move there. Like.
No, thank you. Stay over there.
What was Scott Carson doing? Just asking as well, just because, you know, that'll
probably holding his Champions League medal up.
Both of them.
Yeah.
Like, still on the halfway line with hand up either way. Yeah, bless him. I want to talk about the half 12 kickoff thing because it's weird and it's become such a huge Liverpool related conversation, Keo, but I think it took something from the game. My general opinion is if you want to put the two best teams head to head, you find a way to put them in a slot that gets the most out of them. I know in England we don't like to do that somehow because there's a weird like favouritism thing and everyone's got to be equal for everyone, blah 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 blah. That game, look, it might actually benefited us, City not being a little bit sharper, but yeah, I mean, McAllister even come out and said like in the team meeting he was falling asleep the day before because he'd had no sleep and jet lag and all that kind of stuff. It's a shit situation. It annoys me sometimes because I'd like to see Liverpool just play it more favourable times, obviously.
There's two ways of looking at it. You get the Arlash view of the footballers, they're on first class flights, and anyone knows you travel 4-hour flight, 3-hour flight, you're knackered when you get home and you're ready for your bed, never mind travelling 7,000 miles from South America. And if you look at the, how many is it, 13, 14 or something we've had early kickoffs since Klopp came in or something mad like that, they're always a little bit stale, and it's just early kickoffs in general. I think when you said it might have benefited us, I'm not sure, because I think we've got South Americans that could have really impacted that game more.
Yeah.
You know, with the Diazes and McAllister, he started to tire a little bit more. Alisson, who was quite clearly still half a kip in the first 15 minutes, he was dithering a little bit, wasn't he? But I'm not going to criticise the man because the save leads to the goal.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but you can see it. It's half 12 kickoffs. They do matter. They do matter. You can see it from the results. You can see it from the performances. I hate them. I don't like them.
Yeah.
I believe that it was Greater Manchester Police that stopped it being a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday, wasn't it? Because that's why it was the Sky game as well. Because obviously Sky normally had the 5:30. They were worried about the clashes between the two sets of fans and stuff like that. So they've been the ones to say it's 12:30. But the Premier League's, I think I'm with you, Paul. Like, I know it's Europe this week, so you couldn't have it the Monday night or whatever. But like, I think the league should probably do more to make their product, and I hate fucking saying that, better. Because ultimately, that's what the league think of it as. They think of it as a product. Like, the other leagues always seem to bend over backwards for teams playing in Europe. Premier League's never done that. Italy do it, Spain do it, etc.
The league love making life easier for their champions.
And why wouldn't they? Well, like, you know, you're trying to make... They are trying to make their product better.
Because this country's fucking thick. Honestly, the amount of people I've seen this week go... Talk about, like, the teams that tried to leave for the Super League. It was on that Gary Neville's footy show, and they're going here, oh, these teams, they tried to leave the league. They never tried to leave the league.
UEFA.
And then UEFA snuck a competition change through on the back of it, riding the crest of a wave anyway, to basically get something that no one wanted.
Fucking guy.
And I think the set of fans clashing thing, it's a cop-out, and it's an excuse to put a big attractive game at 12:30, so everyone sits down nice and early and watches a full day's football. There's a game after that, and there's a game after that, and that's the reason. Because historically, don't get me wrong, I know Scousers and Manx hate each other, but historically, we've been going to City now for years. I've never seen it go off big time outside that ground.
Honestly, absolutely that. There's a bit of, like, I think there's becoming a bit of, like, weirdness, I think, mainly on the Man City half, to be honest, you know, in terms of some of the things they say online and the
they
way
want
they
more rivalry than
they want. Exactly that. Like, Old Trafford's still the only place I've gone and seen open fighting in the streets between young fans. I mean, that's the only time. But you're right, it's not a Liverpool City thing. It isn't like that, is it? No. So I don't know whether there could have been more pushback. And look, you know, it's the police that ultimately are the ones who are putting themselves out there, aren't they? So they'll obviously be reasoning behind it, but it does feel a bit like Man City have got more fans now, but they're not more Manx. You know what I mean? There's not more people who have got this inbred, to correct choice of words, born hatred towards Scousers. It's a bunch of people who are just coming for the jollies, coming to watch their thing. Now, it's not going to add, you know, it's not going to add to the needle.
That's the thing that does Guardiola's head in. We were talking, you know, before the show, Keo was talking, of course, and we'll get on to it, but, like, they've just got football fans there who want to watch a game of football, and that's exactly who it is. And I mean, you were saying yourself there, you think it might be pissing Guardiola off.
Yeah, I do. I believe... Just on the way he acted, I've seen him do it before, but the comments after it and the way he was with a couple of Liverpool players after it started the end for Guardiola for me. I think the European Cup has changed things massively for City winning it. I think if Guardiola left Man City before he won that, it'd always go down in history that he didn't do the job. He didn't win the European Cup. He was brought in to do it. He got given billions of pounds and he couldn't win it. Now he's won it. Now he's got, there's no flies on him. And he's getting pissed off at the crowd, and he knows he's had a bit of a plasticky, shitty club with no real, you know, I'm going to go into it, but you know what I'm trying to say.
I think
if you Guardiola now and you're looking at it and you think, why would I keep doing this? Why would I keep playing for the team where the atmosphere is terrible and they're singing about Gerrard that happened 10, 11 years ago? And it's not a great team to manage. It's not a great place to be in. You know, you look at some of the grounds and that he could possibly go to, and in Europe, he can win European Cups with other teams now as well. Yeah. And that's another thing, by the way, as well. He's like, he's got this thing where he's won in Germany and he's won in England. I think he's probably going to look at France next, and maybe can he get PSG a European Cup or a national job? There's other stuff for him.
It's a funny one because, I mean, this week he was asked obviously about like the charges again on the back of the Everton stuff. And he was saying basically at the moment, if they want us relegated, I'm more likely to be managing them in that division, which is one of those weird things that I wouldn't put it past them if something mad happened to him, they got relegated, him to do it to a season, almost because his legacy is complete in football. Yeah. He's free to do what he wants to do. But equally, I do agree that it's a bit like when you're in a relationship or you're in a job or whatever, it's not right, but you go and you set yourself this target. When this happens, it's going to be fine. Yeah. Well, if I can just get to here, that's going to change the landscape. And then you get there and it's more of the same, and you go, oh, actually, no, it's this milestone. And for City, it's like, at what point do they get the level of support that United get when they win things? Or, I mean, fucking honestly, I finished watching the Wrexham documentary the other week. It wouldn't shock me if more people turned up to Wrexham's parade than turned up to Man City's treble winning one. You know what I mean? I mean, there won't have been, but it's, and the passion that gets shown for it. He's done all he can possibly do at Man City. All he can do is repeat the feat. And that will add a bit more eyes and a bit more interest, and it'll obviously add to his CV and stuff. But there's nothing he's going to do in his lifetime that's going to lead to the parade that Liverpool had in 2019 after winning the European Cup. Mm. There's nothing that he can do as City manager that's ever going to generate that level of interest, because there isn't that level of interest because you're meant to, because you've got bottomless funds. You've got the best manager in the world. You go out and buy all the biggest players and put them on the biggest wages. Where's the jeopardy? Where's the challenge? So, yeah, you know, there's a come a point where now he's emboldened, he can swing his dick around even more than he ever has before. But to what end?
And he did, though, yesterday, the comment, well, maybe we need to play better for them to make some noise. They just want a treble. Yeah. They're the best side. You know, you can't get any better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They are the best side in Europe at the minute. They've won the three cups. And he's saying, well, maybe we play better, they can get behind us. It's sarcasm, and it's a man who's fed up with it.
City, I've always come across like the spoiled little kid to me, like whose dad's got everything and you can give them every toy and all that type of stuff, and their fans come across spoilt. And that's what it is. When you've won how many games on the bounce at the Etihad and you don't win a game, they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater because they haven't won it, and they get so used to it. You saw it with United towards the end and their fan base. Yeah. You know, they get spoilt. You could feel it with Liverpool. Every fan base,
it's kept into ours a bit since
we spoiled. It does. Every fan base does, because you get used to something, then you don't know how to react to a season like we had last year, and people start throwing the baby out with the bathwater on it last year and stuff, because you get used to something. And that's what City are at the moment, except City never had to work for it, and that's the difference.
Yeah,
I was in that ground on Saturday and it was crap from both sets of fans, if I'm being perfectly honest. But we didn't have, you know, the ground, the majority of the ground, like City fans did. And there was little pockets where they'd sing songs mostly not about their own team, which was a bit mad. But I walked out of the ground and thought to myself, I don't know if that's an half 12 kickoff or what, because that atmosphere was absolutely shocking. It's the biggest game in Premier League right now. It's the one that would have been advertised the most. It's the two teams that people think might go head to head. And like you mentioned there, it came across as like City fans. There's not enough of the core. And there is City fans who are like us,
yeah,
who
course.
Are fully bought into it and have been bought into it for, you know, their entire lives.
Yeah. But Stockport have got those level of fans. Every football club has got those fans.
But there's not enough of them. And it was mad because I went on Twitter and I saw Manchester City fans fuming at Pep Guardiola because he couldn't understand how Manchester City is for tourists to come and go, and not everyone knows the songs and this and that. And I was like, well, that's not Pep Guardiola's fault. He still expects, no matter where you are in the world, if you come into support a football club and you come into the game, you should know the songs. You should be able to sing.
Don't go the gig and get and fight your way to the barrier at the front if you don't know the words to the songs.
And there was a couple of Twitter City fans fuming at the fact that Pep Guardiola just couldn't understand that there wasn't enough Manx at the game who have been fans but for years on end.
It's what you're saying. It's a culture thing. It's a what's the culture that's being handed down? And look, the more fans you get, the more this gets diluted. It's just inevitable. But this is the thing with Liverpool, is that what stands us apart from most clubs. And look, United have got this as well, and most historically big football clubs have got it too. Is that having the history and having the songs and having a songbook that you learn and some learned behaviours that you can pick up from going to the game, they're important. But this is the thing, they've got a whole new bunch of fans, and you're always going to get people who pick your team for random reasons. I think you probably know this a little bit better than most because you're NFL fans and what have you. Yep. There's something that makes you pick them, and if you've never been to that city, it has to be, there has to be something. And for a lot of people, it might be, hey, I like the kit, or I just like supporting the team that's going to give me the best passing experience for success and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what that core Manchester City identity is that you can turn around to someone behind and go, this is how we're meant to conduct ourselves. So I don't see how it's ever going to be more.
I know what it is. They picked it because they win. And so when you turn up and they've paid £50 and you don't see a win, they think, well, I paid £50 to watch Manchester City win there. Nah, you paid £50 to go and support your side. Whether they win, lose or draw is completely irrelevant to how much money you fucking paid.
Yeah, but I've seen a clip, I'm not sure where it was from, is that Baldy Head City fella in the, with the
Guardiola.
The old kit. No, he's talking about going through the divisions and we used to go to Main Road and all this. Yeah. My lad doesn't even want to go to Wembley anymore. And I thought, hang on a minute, you're saying you've been through all this and you've watched your team go from League One to the Premier League and the heights. Why aren't you telling your son to make sure he goes to fucking Wembley?
Yeah.
Like, what are you on about?
Yeah.
He's bored of it, he's sick of it. Well, that's your fucking problem right
there,
isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My thing that always gets me is that when they go, you know, we've been through the leagues, we went down there, we went to Stockport away, and I'm like, yeah, and we would, everyone would. Of course you would. Let's look at, like, it's a fucking prize. Well done, you supported your football club. You know, no one gets a choice when you really support a football team, and that's your life. You'll watch your team play in a fucking back garden if you have to. I always think that's funny. That's it, like, their justification for all the stuff that's come. And I do feel a little bit sorry for the ones, for the fans, as it were, who they never chose to have their football club have this injection into it. So you can't change your love for the team, you're going to continue to support it. But I do like that, like, that badge of honour thing, as though, like, it's a unique feat supporting your football team. You know what I mean? Like, so what you're saying is you follow your football team. Well fucking done, congratulations. Brilliant. Maybe you should tell all your new fans what that was like
when you get to Wembley, but now we don't bother. Yeah, you know what I mean? I went through, it's a Stockport, but FA Cup final, fuck that.
Sorry, we'll just send some more flags to cover the seats. Yeah, all the best. It was an interesting quote from Bernardo Silva, saying, he said, I think we should have won, but when you play a team like Liverpool this season, they are back being very competitive again. He also name checked Arsenal and Spurs in that, Chris, but it does feel like there's a general sense that I still feel it's not quite as on totally solid ground. I don't feel like Liverpool in my bones are totally ready to be a dominant a team that's going to go and steamroll the title or whatever this year. But I do, the more I see of us, you go back to it before, it's a season of unanswered questions that get answered the more we play. I do feel more ready for it, having seen us go up against Man City.
Well, yeah, I think Trent said after the game, didn't he? You get a point there and it instills a belief and a confidence in the side. And I think that's what I think we were all thinking when we were going into the game, is that there are moments that happen during a season that you can look back and go, that was a bit of a turning point. And that was maybe this one where, Chloe mentioned it before about the McAllister thing. I think with Jürgen speaking about McAllister playing the six and then McAllister putting in a performance like that, I'd hope that a lot of Liverpool fans now just drop that conversation. It doesn't do us any good to keep talking about it over and over. The lads at a new football club, he's doing a job for the team that he didn't think he was going to be doing, but he's doing a job admirably. I go back to it, when Arsenal played the big games this season, they moved Declan Rice from that position and they put Jorginho in there. He's not a fucking DM, but when they played City and when they played Chelsea and when they played Tottenham, they're doing that. There's a reason for it, and I think Jürgen's looking at McAllister going, you know what, I think Liverpool can win with him there. And I think I'd just love us to stop talking about it, because Fabinho took 3 months to learn the position. He was a fucking DM. We gave him that. We just gave him it. Oh no, he's learning the role. McAllister's an attacking midfielder learning the DM role. It should take more than 3 months. It really should.
And we do it.
But we can win with him there, and we are winning with him there.
Exactly. There's always got to be something. We were saying, we did it 2 weeks ago, we were talking about what's going to stop Liverpool winning the league, and it was like the away form, and then we looked at it, it was like we're one worse point off than Manchester City, and you could point that literally at the Tottenham Hotspur game. And then it was 2 weeks before that, it was Liverpool's defence. Well, we went into the City game with the best defence in the league, and then it's the DM. There's got to be something. And I guess
it's the McAllister as well, because his numbers add up to all the other DMs.
Absolutely. I don't think any of us looks at him and goes, I think if we sit here in two transfer windows and he's the first choice number six, it's either, we'll either have silverware under our belt, which will have totally proved that it was a brilliant decision to do that, or there'll be, they'll have something mad will have happened in the interim period. I do feel like there's a space to go and buy someone who is truly built for it. It feels like a bit of a happy accident, but to the point, if Liverpool were languishing in sixth and seventh and he was an issue every single game, then it's a bigger issue than it is. No team is built perfectly. There is not a perfectly built squad or 11 really in this division at the moment. Everyone's carrying something. Arsenal haven't got a striker. You know, Man City are probably closest, but they haven't got the depth. They've got too few footballers really to balance it out. Liverpool, everyone's got their ups and downs. McAllister's a bit of a
I suppose going back onto it, like I think everyone can see that this Liverpool side can be something special. Mm-hmm. It's whether we achieve it this season or next season for me.
Yeah,
you know, and that, it goes back to having that patience to watch the side and understand that they're moving in the right direction. And you don't get everything plugged straight into you that you want. You've sometimes just got to learn how to do it. Like Jurgen Klopp's first great Liverpool side didn't just start like that. Mm-hmm. It happened somewhere, and it was born out of that defeat, I think, in the UEFA Cup final, Europa League final, you know what I mean? And,
I like that.
And it was those hardships. But it's those hardships that makes the side and steals the side for what's to come, isn't it? You know, and getting beaten by Real Madrid the first time, you kick on from there. So it shouldn't all be plain sailing. It won't all be plain sailing, but again, goes back to just have that patience to support and watch them grow.
You can jumpstart your car and then you can get off and go and do a journey with it, but in reality, if you hit a point where you've got to stop and your battery's not been charged, then you're not going to get it going again, whereas you need to charge the battery to go on that long journey sometimes. And that's a bit where it's at, because I'm looking at, like, we've talked about the atmosphere. Liverpool's atmosphere has not been great so far this season, but a lot of the reasons boils down to it. Got a lot of new players, they haven't earned songs yet. Okay, well, no, this more than most.
Got a job on.
Yeah, well, no, but this is the thing, though, isn't it? You don't get to just do that. That you earn them through the journey. You know, it's European aways and it's FA Cup games and it's going to far flung places, and then these songs just kind of come out of nowhere. New heroes emerge, and so we are. That's why it feels like a bit soon for it to be totally ready. We don't have a new songbook of things that we can rattle out now. You know, it's still the Salah song and the Virgil van Dijk song, and thank God Jota gets in the team when he does, because he's still got an absolute belter.
And they've taken the Jurgen's off us. He's taken the
Jurgen's off us. Until after the match.
It's definitely a process, but you can't get too far ahead of yourselves too soon on that, because it's the thing, we've lived it enough. At some point, we'll get out the groups of the Europa League, probably, you know, we'll get into, like, we'll end up with a really interesting away in the round of 16, and then out of nowhere there'll just be the best Luis Diaz song you've ever heard in your life, or Szoboszlai will just have this absolute stone cold banger that you won't be able to stop singing, and then all of a sudden there's a groundswell and everything builds towards us having a successful, I mean, fucking three little birds, the Europa League first season. Where is that, like, it's not like a Liverpool song, but we just adopt it along the way and it becomes the anthem of that. Yeah, we haven't got our anthem for this year yet. But
I think we're early on as well, though. Yeah. And it goes back to, you said before, it's happened to our fan base a little bit. We are a little bit spoiled. I remember being out the European Cup for 5 years, and then the first game, group game, we were in there an hour and a half early, all made up, we were back in it. Anfield was rocking, the Champions League's back. Early on in the Champions League last year, and early on in the League Cup now, and early on the FA Cup, it's a little bit...
Yeah, fucking Napoli again.
Yeah, God. It's a little bit, and it's because you're spoiled, and it's because you'd expect to win trophies, but the moment you can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, that last 16 draw comes, and you win, and you think, we're 4 games away from the final here, here we go, and we're a point off the top, and all of a sudden it's, well, let's not try and find problems, let's get behind them all, let's not have a look at McAllister and try and, like, get on his back, let's just get behind a lot of them, let's, we can do this, and it just changes, and it's starting to happen now, in my opinion, because before that game last week, everyone was right up for it, and if we didn't win it the weekend, sorry, if we lost it the weekend, it would have been a little bit, I don't know, but that point and that reaction from the players going a goal down, we all starting to feel something, and if we get to the new year within a point, you can start to believe in it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple of comments that come in while we've been having the chat. The first one is from Veronica. It says, a shame we didn't win, but I'm pleased with a draw. Absolutely. Will Alexander says, we sat too deep at the start. A valuable point, though. But yeah, I mean, again, it's hindsight to look back at the tactical approach to stuff, is that you could see in how both teams played. It was at times it was very akin, I always refer back to when we had Roy Hodgson in charge and we played Sam Allardyce's Blackburn at Anfield, and that game was two teams who wanted to have possession on the edge of their own 18 yard boxes, and they engaged like two people having a fight from the opposite sides of the ring.
It was like fencing, like
touching fingertips in the middle of the pitch. That was it. It wasn't like a meaty head to head, let's all go and get in the mix. It wasn't like two armies colliding throughout the pitch. It was like, we're going to sit back deep and you're going to sit back deep, you deal with that. It was a little bit like that. Both, neither team wanted to open up and run the risk of absolutely throwing it all away. So yeah, I don't disagree with the point, but yeah. Hawks has not only gifted 10 memberships here on YouTube, which is absolutely phenomenal, but has also sent a comment in and says, Guardiola might win everything again, but for every asset they have, for Pep to allow that squad to get where it is either arrogance or a pure blunder. Hopefully we can capitalise. This is the thing about them. I always say this, there should be more pressure on him because of the fertile environment in which he's got to grow his success. But the problem is that no one really cares that much about them, and they haven't got enough fans for it to make a difference. Whereas like Liverpool, Arsenal and Manchester United have just got these huge, rabidly obsessed fan bases who just put pressure on for and against at all at any given moment. It makes it all the sweet when he fucks it up, but again, it also makes it easier to shrug off when he is successful, because well done.
Well, that's how it works with City, isn't it? If we beat them, it's an unbelievable achievement because they're the best team in the world. If they win something, it's like, I'm not asked.
Yeah, it's fine. No one cares.
No one's asked, like.
100%. Right, we're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to be discussing the wonderful footballer that is Trent Alexander-Arnold. We're going to be having a little chat about LASK and looking ahead to Liverpool's next three and potentially a pivotal 9 points in the title challenge season.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yes, get involved with our incredible festive competition and giveaway each and every day leading up to and including Christmas Day. We're going to be giving away a Boss prize ranging from signed gear to just cool little bits of Liverpool stuff. So join up at redmanplus.com as a legend, tier subscriber, and get your name in the hat for those. Right, let's crack on. I want to talk about Trent. Obviously, we didn't talk too much about individual performances, Chloe, but I like the fact that it isn't just me. I've been beating the Trent is the best right back in the world drum for 5 years plus now, at least. And obviously in the last 2 years, I think there's been loads more scrutiny on him. And it feels like in the last week, he's put some good performances in for England in midfield. He's come in and scored a really big goal at a really big moment in the Premier League against Man City. And it's kind of nice to see, not the people who are all of a sudden going, he's a perfect defender, but it's almost like they're going, okay, well, he is what he is. Like, you know, he's got the ability to do this like no other. I like the fact that I put a tweet out and I can say it with my full chest that I think he's the best right back the Premier League's ever seen, and I'm prepared to fight people on that, and I don't really care again anymore, because there's never been anything quite like him, and I'm glad that he's having a good time again.
I don't think he had his best game against Manchester City, but I certainly didn't think he was bad. There was people raving about Jeremy Doku, and look, Jeremy Doku is an unbelievable footballer, by the way. But those take-ons and those dribble past Trent moments, often Trent doesn't get dribbled past, he just doesn't engage because he doesn't want to be pulled out of position. Yeah. So he drops off at some point, and that's classed as it. He wasn't good for their goal. neither was Sobo though mm-hmm. either. Both of them went great. But I saw him for England in midweek, and he got man of the match in one of them. His passing is, you know, the closest person to him is Kevin De Bruyne, and I could rave about Kevin De Bruyne literally for weeks on end. And I think Trent, because there's been so much scrutiny on him, his defensive capabilities, he's kind of dismissed as a good footballer at times. He's an unbelievable footballer. Some of the passes he does and assists, no one else can possibly do. Only him and Kevin De Bruyne. He's so, so good. And I thought he was sound. His goal, the way he takes it, is brilliantly as well. He's just got a deal with Adidas, which, you know, is class as well. The shoes that he showed off to get a goal at Manchester City. So, yeah, I'm happy to see him back. I think he's going to be extremely influential. Look, when Liverpool have been boss, Trent Alexander-Arnold has been unbelievable, and we used to see it from him out wide, whipping balls in, and somehow Salah getting a header on the end of him, even though he's like 5 foot something. So yeah, I think he's back to his best. I thought defensively he did quite well against Manchester City, and also, you know, he was influential in the game and he did exactly what he needs to do, and hopefully that just continues for him.
He just keeps seeing off the competition, Keo. And this is the thing for me with Trent, is like, you just get to kind of step back. I just have always enjoyed watching him play. And he has had, you know, he's had better games than others, you know, throughout that, because he's a footballer, they all do. People forget sometimes, like, nostalgia is a powerful tool. Like, it's not like Gerrard had a perfect career for Liverpool. It's not like Roy Keane had this perfect career, and go through them. I'm certain, look, how many people watched every game of Zidane's career, but there will have been games where his influence wasn't as you know, as huge.
He one of them.
He made a documentary about one
90
of
minutes of him running around the centre circle. Could have picked a better game for that, couldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. But it was one of those things that came out at the weekend, like Reece James being sent off had kind of added to this a little bit. But like Reece James, he's had loads of injury problems which have definitely hampered him, but all of a sudden that was the one. There's always the one, isn't there?
He's always the yardstick. No one ever compares to anyone else.
Yeah,
that tells you all you need to know.
Exactly that. You know, I was going to say Andrew Villas-Boas, no, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, there we go. It was going to be, and then there's always another one, another one. This Kieran is the guy.
Yeah, as well. That's another one that gets thrown about.
I've seen a stat before. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was nearly 1 in 3 a goal or assist for a right back. That's fucking frightening, that, you know. Like, it is, it's absolutely frightening. And
isn't that the same as Darwin's?
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it's over a lengthy period as well, do you know what I mean? So he's world class.
That's Teddy Sheringham, though.
He's the best right back in the world, in my opinion, never mind the league. Like, he's the best right back in the world. And this constant debate of where he goes and what we do with him, we don't do anything with him, where he's getting them numbers. And he's not a complete liability going back. And I seen Gary Neville say something yesterday, and I very rarely agree with Gary Neville, but defending is actually easy to learn compared to the part of the game that he's got. If you want to try and teach a right back to pass like that and score from outside the box, and you've got a big job on, but if you want to try and teach a right back to jockey Doku, then you can do it. You can do it. So he's not far away from that, and he's still, what, 25? Plenty of time.
25
that, plenty of cups to win. And do you reckon these boots, by the way, Chloe, do you reckon they've had a say or a little part of playing him striking that ball? Because I know if I had a pair of new Preds on, I'd be thinking, I'm going to, Gerrard!
He's definitely shouting Gerrard in his head.
Yeah, I think he's had a part to play. So fair play Adidas for giving him for the big game. Like.
Yeah,
couldn't have gone better for them, could it, releasing them off the back of that?
Jude Bellingham, I think, also scored in his game. And he's
Black ones on as well, didn't he? I've seen them.
Black boots, black Adidas.
Yeah.
Black Preds
with a red tongue.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the old school one.
Yeah, the one. Just missed out on Bellingham. Missed out on Bellingham in Preds.
Fuck's sake. I was just about getting over it.
No, because he's great. We know he's great, you know, and I just find that you've got to, like, people feel like they've got to qualify every positive they say about Trent with, oh, but the defensive side of things, it's like, just fucking shut up and enjoy it.
Not even that bad.
If you, like, it always boils down to what is the manager doing with him. The manager keeps playing him, so the manager's obviously happy with him, and I trust Jürgen Klopp, you know what I mean? Like, if you have another right back like Aaron Wan-Bissaka and you asked him to move over the halfway line for his average position, you wouldn't get none out of him, and he'd be worse defensively. Do why? Because his starting point's not the right place for what you want out of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, because you want him to defend.
Yeah.
So his positioning is always the thing. I don't think as a tackler he's that bad. I think he's the same as most of the tacklers. There's not Branislav Ivanovic or Azpilicueta are the two fullbacks where I've gone over the last 10, 15 years, fucking hell, they're hard to get past, like, you know what I mean? There's not many of them, like. But as a tackler, I think he's okay. I think his positioning is what lets him down, and his positioning is because of the system that Liverpool play. So I can understand why he doesn't.
So it's not his positioning, it's the positioning position.
If he was in the wrong place, you're going to tell him to move. But he's played 5 years of being in the wrong place, so he's not in the wrong place. Jürgen's telling him he's there. Otherwise, Jürgen will just drop off, lads.
I'm not going to play in if you keep going out of position, because Jürgen doesn't see it like that. And this is the England argument as well. Southgate plays in midfield, he's brilliant. Southgate is nowhere near the manager Klopp is. And if you give England, Klopp that England team, he'd win everything with them.
And England.
So, and he'd play right back.
Yeah, exactly. And he's pointless.
Well, yeah, but also, let's not forget, because it gets forgotten, international football is not as good as Premier League and Champions League standard. It's not. So, I mean, and this is where this forever with like Gini Wijnaldum is playing in the 10 for Holland and he's scoring goals. Yeah, because international football is fucking shit.
And it's San Marino.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, because ultimately it's easier to do that at international level than it is to do it in the Premier League at the highest level, in the highest levels of Europe and all that. Like, yeah, absolutely fine. But I like the fact that people are starting to go,
But they're only starting to do it because they're all fucking England fans, Paul. And they all want England to do well. So the narrative shifts around Trent because they think that they know better than everybody else. And for England to win something, the difference is Trent. And it might well be. He's well better in midfield, I'm sure, than the players that they've had playing there.
Yeah.
So I can understand it. But until he has a bad performance in there, and then they'll go back he's not good defensively to play in midfield or whatever. Because that's all they want. They just want England to do well. It's not a Liverpool thing.
You know, I looked at Kyle Walker's performance at the weekend, and the amount of times that he picked the ball up in that sort of inside right channel and was just giving it. And then what's his job there? It's just to pass it on to the other guy who's good at passing. Well, Trent's picking the ball up in that area, and his job is to play a killer pass into the box. So there'll be one of those things where his pass completion starts to look lower, and it's what you're really looking at in those situations. I think Kyle Walker's terrific, by the way, as a proper traditional understanding of a right back plus. Reece James, absolutely same. I think they're both really, really good players. These things don't have to be mutually exclusive. You don't have to think Reece James is shite because you think Trent's really good. I just think Trent is a talent beyond anything I've ever seen at right back football.
Generational is the word I'd use.
I keep seeing people saying it, like we've mentioned it already. If you put Kevin De Bruyne at right back, you know, ask him how good of a defender would he be? He's better in the final third than Trent will be, of course, but he's just unfucking believable, and hopefully he just gets to play some football games and enjoy them, and we get to enjoy him, and the criticism can basically get.
And we've won leagues and European Cups from playing at right back, and his numbers add up to blow anyone out the water who's ever played in that position. So I think that's
he set records for most assists, didn't he? And like him, he made Andy Robbo a better left back, and Andy Robbo made Trent a better right back. I can never picture this Liverpool squad for the next 10 years without Trent Alexander-Arnold in that because he is going forward. He might be our most influential footballer. We've now got Sobo and we've now got Gravenberch, but when we did win the leagues and the Champions League, our midfield was a midfield that wasn't creative. It was a workhorse. Yeah. It was a grinder. So you had to find other players to really enable those front three to do what they did. And Trent was the lad. Trent and Robbo were the two that were unlocking everything for us.
And we're always guilty, I think, of looking at what everyone else has got and like sort of like, oh, look what they do. And like we've somehow got to copy what everyone else does. It's got to be exactly what Man City do. I do enviously look at how the midfields they've been able to put out over the last 5 years, and I marvel at like how many attacking players they get on the pitch. So the weekend, like, you know, you've got Rodri there, and they're effectively just playing two front three players in midfield alongside them. They've got away with Bernardo Silva as the inverted left back in games last season, you know, like not loads, but they've done it. Liverpool have always found a different way of doing things, and you know, you see
John Stones does the inverted thing for them. It was the other guy does it at the weekend.
Akanji.
Fine. Trent's better and will naturally be better at that, but it means that you have to do things slightly different elsewhere in the pitch. Whatever. Ultimately, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. If Liverpool can be at the top of football with players of that kind of caliber,
do you reckon like Real Madrid fans about 15 years ago saying the same thing about Roberto Carlos or Barcelona probably, fans yeah. talking about frigging their right back Dani Alves and all that type of stuff? And do you reckon they were all just having the same conversations as we've been having for the last 5 years?
Heads ultimately, none of us really knows what we're talking about. So that's why you've got to go. Do you enjoy watching it? Is it more successful than it's not yet? Then fine. You know what I mean? Take your licks whatever they come. Right, let's do Lask very briefly, because there will be a match preview on this as well. But their manager says basically he doesn't want them to come to us as tourists. And there has been a little bit of that, I think, in the Europa League so far, Keo, because these teams, they're playing Liverpool, it shouldn't be understated. Sometimes this is the biggest game in most of these guys' careers. And I've seen now, I've been to Lask, I've been to USG's ground. These are not like the fortresses of Europe. These are not the most historic football clubs or the big, they're all good football clubs in their own right, of course. But I quite like that. You know, this is a game that actually it matters to Liverpool. This should be the last one that matters. You know, we can get 3 points here. We can box the group off. We can box off top of the group. We can do whatever the hell we want to do and have a bit of a jollies on it. I mean, I'd like it to be a dead rubber by now, but listen, we shit the bed in Toulouse and this is the price of doing that, really. But they gave us a good game away from home. So this should be at least be something. We talked about the atmosphere thing. It being a competitive game of football probably actually benefits us a little bit. So it's not a bit of a snooze fest and no one gives a shit about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what happened at Toulouse. I think we just slightly underestimated a little bit and didn't get going. And it just wasn't our day. And we said before, it happens. Teams can't be 100% every single and win every single game. And if you're going to lose a game, I'd probably pick one of them Europa League game, so let's not think too much about what happened in Toulouse and just sort of get the job done. Regardless of what team he puts out, it's going to be capable of beating them. Obviously, the goalie situation, I think he's picked up an injury, so Keller is going to play, which he probably would do anyway. So it doesn't really change much what's happened over the past week or two. Get the job done and then put that to bed, and like I say, we move into the Christmas period with that job done, knowing that we can focus on the Europa League next year.
The Kelleher thing's interesting, isn't it, Chloe? Because, you know, he's a good goalie. He really is. And Keo's right. He'd have played this game regardless. We don't know the full extent of Alisson's injury at this point. But if they can get away with not risking him, you know, if you could get away with not playing Alisson at the weekend, even if he's capable just about of doing it, then that's the ideal scenario. It's not no bad thing to actually have Kelleher tested, send him into this game. We might need him. You know, it could be a run of games that he gets off the back of this.
Yeah, I think we all sat here maybe a year and a half ago and was saying, you know, he's the best backup goalkeeper in the Premier League. You know, he could go and play in the Premier League and be a number one for quite a lot of the teams in there. And I think a lot of, he's been given a lot of criticism, but he's a young lad who, you know, hasn't been given the rhythm or the form, and it's possibly the hardest position to be dropped in and then pulled out and dropped in, because all your instincts, you know, you can train all you want, but actually it's so much different in a game of football because there's so many different scenarios that you can't possibly play out in training every single time. You know, deflections, where people win the ball, or transitions. So, like, it must be incredibly hard for him. And I think, you know, Southampton, he had a bit of a tough game. And since then, he's been heavily criticised because of his performances, if he could be doing better. And, you know, if he does come into this game, and if he is needed, God forbid Alisson's actually injured, we all need to get behind the lad, and we all need to sit there and support him. And maybe a run of games will actually show you the Kelleher that we all sat there saying was the best backup goalkeeper in the league, because he's got to still be there. It's still the same lad. He's not playing week in. He doesn't have the rhythm, and you need that as a goalkeeper, as a midfielder or something coming in. You know, you're on the ball a lot. It's all, you know, It's with you. It's
get over your ring rust in half an hour in midfield.
Exactly. Goalkeeper's different, you know, and So yeah, I'm really gonna. I hope he does well on Thursday, and you know I don't want him to be the hero because that means Liverpool are having a nightmare. But it'd be nice for him to have a moment that everyone can get behind and be like, yeah, that's the Gallagher that we all know.
He's a quality goalkeeper.
Yeah, he is
a quality goalkeeper. You just need to close right, and you know he just needs a bit of a run of games and stuff like that. But it must be, I don't know. I was trying to think of like the psychology side of it for a goalkeeper or something. Especially when you know, no matter how, for everyone else, it's a meritocracy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For Cleveland Keller, it's not. You're in for this game and you're fucking out for the next one because Alisson Becker's coming back in. That must be quite hard for him going into the games thinking about, you know, and I'm not saying that changes because Alisson's injured, but knowing that you might get two or three games might just push that fear to one side for a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's also that thing of, Chloe, you know, if there's not this game in midweek and he has to play the next league game, you'd be more worried about it. Whereas it's nice that he's got the game that he'd be getting anyway, and he's going to go in, as you said, in a little bit more, yeah. A bit more rhythm.
Yeah, he at least knows, you know, the concentration levels and everything that's got to be in it. But it's mad because, you know, you spoke about mentality there. I think we all knew he wanted to leave Liverpool. Like, he wanted to go and be a number one. He said that in his press conference against, like, Union Saint-Gilloire, I think it was. He came out and said, I'm not focusing on anything else. My goal is to be a number one. And people were like, you know, you're up behind Alisson Becker. And he went, okay, like, I know I'm going to be that, but that's the standard I've got to set myself. And it must be hard for him because then, you know, in the summer, there would have been a load of teams lining up for Kelleher. And now he's kind of had a little tough time. Mm-hmm. He's not in form. You're not getting to see as much of him. So, like, those little pockets where people are being criticising him, for other clubs, that might stay in their mind, think, oh, actually, he's not, maybe not the one. And if Liverpool do allow him to leave, he also must be thinking to himself, every time I've got to come in, I've got to show the quality because now's my moment because I might not get a lot of them.
I think he finishes the cup double season. We're not calling it the quadruple season anymore. I've just made that call out, by the way. He finishes that season at £35 million goalie, I think.
Yeah.
And probably going into this summer, he's back to being a 10 to 15 million one, because that's just kind of what happens. And you're right, the psychology of it's really interesting, because even if you play your best, you're probably not knocking Alisson out of that position. But then also, you know, I've been in that situation, not even a comparable level, but if you're only coming in for one game here and there, then you know you've got to be perfect. It just puts more pressure on that one performance. And for that position where one little moment or lapse in concentration can cost you an entire football match, it is wildly different. But my doubts on him are starting to creep in, if I'm being honest. I'm a little, I'd like him to save more stuff. I just don't feel, no, but you know what, I think he's so calm on the ball. I think stylistically he shoots us down to the ground. But
the reason I sort of laughed there is I've thought about every goalkeeper we've ever had.
I like them,
but I like him to save some more stuff.
Yeah. I just don't feel that. He doesn't feel anywhere near as big and solid in between the sticks as Alisson does. It feels like he's an absolute wall you've got to get it past, whereas Kelleher feels a little, and look, he's just a smaller goalie. I'd like him to make some saves, because my often general feeling is he's very unlucky. I would go back all the way back to that League Cup quarter final against Villa when he plays with the kids, and Villa get like 3-0 up.
Oh God, and
he's nowhere near any of them. He can't get a sniffer. They're like one that's like deflected and loops over him and all that kind of stuff. He has a lot of those go past him. He could just do with making a couple of saves, like big physical, get your body in the way of it. That'll get the crowd up. It'll give him no end of confidence as well. And then it makes strikers start to think. Because if at the moment it feels like go one-on-one with Kelleher and just shoot and it'll go in, you know, that's the kind of, he started to lose a little bit of aura. So I look, it's a good chance for him to get some minutes under his belt, and hopefully he can improve from there. Lastly then, obviously a draw against Man City. In a weird kind of patch of form when you consider the Toulouse defeat in there as well, and obviously going back to the Luton draw in amongst it. The next three for Liverpool, Chris, this is it now. You know, we've now got a succession of very winnable fixtures. It's Fulham at home, it's Sheffield United away, it's Crystal Palace away. Obviously, ideally, I wouldn't necessarily want to play any away games in there, but, you know, life's a shitter. You need 9 points on the board. I'm very titled contention. It's always the next three and the next three and the next three, but put 9 points on
but
the
I
board.
I think the three after that are well harder, aren't they? Much pressure on this three.
But I think we're top of the league if we get 9 points from nine there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're top of Christmas, to be honest with you. I've looked that far ahead. We did it last week, didn't we, on the Bias Football podcast?
I think we're already incorrect. Yeah, every single one, you know,
it is what it is.
As long as you get the point.
Because City go and play in the Club World Cup, do they have an extra game?
Yeah.
They lose a game to us.
I haven't considered that.
So, like, there is a possibility where you're just ahead of Manchester City, and, you know, they've got some tough games as well. If we come through Christmas relatively unscathed, or the run up to Christmas relatively unscathed, I think we will be top of Christmas. So these are massively important. These are the games where I think historically, as a Liverpool fan of, like, let's say the last 30 years or something, you go, fucking hell, this is where Liverpool fucking up.
This is where we take our eyes off the prize and get a lose.
It's always seemed to be the way, like, and, you know, I think that, you know, there's still question marks over Liverpool against promoted sides and all this type of stuff. That's good. Let them answer those questions for us this time around. Yeah.
You've got to learn from Luton, haven't you, Keel? That's the point.
Yeah.
Is that you can drop points at Luton. It's done. By the way, it's done. Because there's no one doing that. Provided it's you take something positive from that, and actually going away to Sheffield United, that's your next nearest comparison to that. There's a team in a little cauldron like, you know, football stadium, who are probably going to defend for their lives within there, and you just got to go there and win. Crystal Palace all of a sudden are not in a particularly good place, but there's another example of that. Don't care how you win it. If it's another one of those 89th, 94th minute 1-0 wins, who gives a shite? But if we're to have serious serious conversations around being title challengers, it's just one of them. It's boring, but you've got to take 9 points.
I think we've had enough experience. Ooh, that's my voice then. I think we've had enough experience
that's
now.
That's not good for a man in your position. Yeah, yeah.
We've had enough experience in title races now to know that to win the title, you've got to turn up in the big grounds and the big games, but you've also got to beat the shite.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it. You blow them away in the first 20 minutes and you manage the game and you see it out. Don't get me wrong, it can't happen every single week. Now, I hope we win the title by a point. Oh. And I hope that Luton point is the point.
Oh.
And it could be. Could be. At the same time, I'm well aware that it could also be 2 points short and I'll go absolutely mad. But yeah. It's happened, it's done, and you've got a fixture there against Sheffield. You've got three fixtures there who had classes shite, and you need to beat all three of them. And no offence to the teams, but
I mean,
we're trying to set a barrier.
Some offence to the teams.
A lot of offence to the teams, yeah. But we're trying to set a barrier, and we're trying to win a title, and we've got to beat them.
Yeah.
So 9 points from that, is anything less than that, I'd be sitting there thinking, well, their problems, you can't beat Luton, if you can't beat Sheffield United, it's going to... If it happens again in March, if it happens again in April, it's a problem.
Yeah.
If you put it to bed and you just win them three games, so I'm not too sure the three games after are, but you're in a hell of a position to go into them three games, and they'll feel like cup finals then going into Christmas. If we can win them three games, they're massive games. Well,
they are, just out of interest, because you guys have covered it previously, but we've got United at home, and then we've got Arsenal at home before Christmas. Obviously, there's the League Cup quarter final with West Ham in there as well, and Union, but okay, yeah, you're dead right.
But Newcastle's are on the first as well. So.
But get your 9 points, because again, let's not go beyond top of Christmas, because we're the only team. I believe we're still the only team that's been top of Christmas and not won it. I think we've done that three times now. But also, you still do have to be top of Christmas pretty much to win the league. So yeah. So it's still a thing. Because we were top of Christmas when we won the league as well, you know. So it's just
So it does work.
Yeah. It works for everyone. It works less for us. But you're right. I think that's a dead spot on point there, Chloe. That it makes the United one and the Arsenal one even more, because we might be in a situation where we've actually got something to lose, which actually means we've got something to fight for.
Yeah, and it also, you know, those other teams in and around us, it's very tight at the top. They also play. Like, anything can happen with those other teams. You've got to get as many points on the board as possible to just put pressure on the teams around you. And look, we've mentioned that I am slightly worried already for half-12 kickoff against Palace, because we played Monday night last year and it was the most boring game of football I think I've ever watched in my life. And that was an 8 p.m. kickoff on a Monday. So in half-12, I'm really hoping the Reds, after, because it's no international break, we really are lively and we set the tempo in those games. We can't underestimate them. We also can't give them too much respect. We really have to play our own game, set the tempo and blow them away if we possibly can. If you could be a bit more like City and get it wrapped up by the 35-minute mark, so we can start making some changes as well with that, like, those fixtures coming up. That'd be even better. Yeah. But win by any means. And if you've got 9 points out of nine there, let me just tell you, there might not be a great atmosphere at Anfield right now, but you get to those fixtures with nine points in your bag.
United more fans in the stadium as well, isn't it, by all accounts? And, you know, I think back to that title winning season, and I know it's very, very different to what we're looking at, but that was the game when the whole world knew that Liverpool were going to win, but the cop started singing, we're going to win the league and all that type of stuff. You get into that game, you put a big marker down against Manchester United, and everything fan-wise might just change.
Yeah, maybe sack the manager again as well, which would be great.
I'll keep him.
Do you know which team?
Even there, I'm all right with him there.
Both Arsenal and City play away from home in the next three.
Is it Chelsea, Tottenham,
Spurs?
I was going to ask you. You know, I was about to say
Villa. It's Villa.
I was about to say to you, I'm already looking at City's fixtures, and that feels good. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that feels good.
Yeah, nice.
Villa is one of the correct answers, but the one I'm really looking for is they both play Luton away in the next.
Oh,
three.
I didn't know that. I've got the fixtures. I put them on a spreadsheet. And so, you know, it's really sad.
And so it's one of them. I've said this all along. I've said this all along. Is that whenever you've got a bad result and you critique it and you go, "That's the one. It was terrible for Liverpool to drop points," and that nobody's going to do that, you find weirdly in seasons that one of your rivals also either does the same or worse. Now they probably will just go and piss Luton, because that'll be fucking, you know, the way it more often goes, but I honestly, I'm going to sit here right now, I would not be shocked to see if Arsenal or City, one of them drop points in that Luton away game, because that's just the weird way that football works.
It's going to help
sometimes
at both ends of the table as well, isn't it? That happens.
I beg.
Villa coming up against City at home as well, is obviously they've won all their home games, haven't they?
City have got a tricky old run of games. We'll touch upon them. We'll do more on this on the Bias Football podcast.
Looking at City's fixtures in December yet.
Yeah, can't wait to turn up City's fucking games 5 minutes for the next 6 months. Yeah. God, for fuck's sake, you knobheads.
Tottenham, they've got Tottenham at home, Villa away, Luton away.
I love those.
And again, the Luton one is just an absolute gimme 3 points for them, without a shadow of a doubt, except that we drop points there. So just watch.
You know
just
what? Watch. That Spurs game for City, I had to turn around and said City absolutely wiped the floor with them because of the amount of injuries. And I watched Spurs v Villa the other day, and look, Villa played unbelievable, got the 3 points in the end, but that first half, Villa were absolutely crap, and Spurs actually took the game to them. So that's made me feel a little bit better about that City v Spurs game, because
Spurs are right now is a team that just throws pacey attackers at you.
I reckon they'll be disruptors all season long for the people who are actually going for the title.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, we're going to be discussing that. Tottenham, we're going to be doing the Everton protests. We're going to be rating the best overhead kick goals of all time. And Arsenal, you know, going back top of the league, it's funny that I haven't really thought about. we're a point behind City. And you're like, oh, fucking hell, Arsenal top of the league. Brilliant. It's probably a huge disrespect. Which is intended.
Well, I'm up for disrespecting them.
Absolutely. Fuck them. Right, that is to come on the Bias to Football podcast this week. Come and join us over on redmenplus.com for that one. If you want to get a year of it for half price, do go and join us at Captain Yearly and use the code REDS, REDS, over on the page there. And of course, don't forget to get your tickets for Belfast and Dublin on the 25th, the 24th in Belfast, the 25th in Dublin next year with Keo as well. So yeah, going to be an absolute belter. They're available on Ticketmaster right now. Right, guys, thank you so much. And come and join us for the next show. Ta-da.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.